So this week's been pretty epic for me in lots of ways, because I've never done much on the water before, and I was given the chance to go sailing, of all places, in the Bay of Islands, with Mosaic, of Mosaic Youth fame, Lance Pilbrow, who's been here a few times, and also Kerry's principal, John Tucker, and a couple of other mates of Lance's. And there's me on the first day. It's a bit of a weird facial, but ignore that. But it's just like, it was just, yeah. Oh. But the scenery, the other scenery, it's fantastic. It was just beautiful. So this is at like this property, this connection that John had this when he was pastoring. And they, it was probably like, I don't know, tens of millions of dollars of property and housing and stuff. And they invited us up. So we sailed up to their little mooring thing and climbed up this track and had this incredible lunch with these views. It was really, really nice. And it was Sunday, and so I thought, I'll get part of Advent right and wear my yellow T-shirt. So, yeah, I was thinking of you all on Sunday as I ate my roast lamb buns and enjoyed the view. Yeah. Cool. So we had three totally different days on the boat. So Sunday was sunny and still. So we largely motored about, sailed around a bit, and stopped at a couple of different bays. Monday was wet, wet, wet. And so we cooked and ate and hung out and motored and ended the day with a bit of a swim and a walk once the weather cleared. But Tuesday was fine and a bit windy. So we sailed quite a bit on Tuesday. And not having done this before, oh, hang on, I'll do that one very quickly. There's the five of us. That's a very quick one. And there's some other nice photos. Yeah, it was very stunning. Now, I haven't done much sailing before, so I quickly realised that sailing involves a lot of different emotions. I see the sailors having a bit of a chuckle there. Do you know where this might be going, John? I should be getting you to talk about this. You're the pro. Oh, can't imagine that. So there's the, this is fun. There's the, this is relaxing. There's the, oh, there's actually quite a lot to do and think about. And the buzz of slowly picking up speed with a little bit wind. There's the buzz that comes from that. And then there's the fear that comes with fast filling sails. It's for newbies. I'm sure it's fun for other people. Because it was really gusty, and because you've got islands all over the place, the wind's just coming and going all over the place. I think that's why. So it was gusty, and Lance had given newbie me the keys to the kingdom. The steering tiller thing that you had to pull. But you move that way and the boat goes the other way. And you move that way. Oh. So wind would suddenly fill the sails and the boat speed just triples, just like that. And we hit 7.4 knots, for those who are interested, at a top speed on a 31-foot boat, which felt very, very fast and scary. Because the boat would lean over, like, you know, like what you see on TV, you know. It was like me, you know, Peter Blake. Or, no, he's the old someone else, Peter Burling. And the problem was that when this happened, when the boat would lean and the wind would just hit those sails, that I didn't have any muscle memory on hand to instantly do the right thing. The right thing was to keep holding course, perhaps a little, steer a little bit into the wind to control the speed and to relax and to enjoy the experience, knowing that we're going somewhere and that this was the purpose and the idea of the whole thing. But my lack of experience of which way and how much to turn this tiller and my fear of the boat actually flipping over, even though it was probably only leaning a tiny bit, caused me to often turn too much into the wind so that it would empty, the wind would empty from the sails and it would slow right down and stop leaning over. And by the way, John Tucker, next to me, Kerry principal, constantly going, faster, Andrew, faster, faster. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. And he kept on reporting on our knots, like I had to hit these targets that he had sort of arbitrarily made up. I think he wanted me to hit 20 or something. So the idea is to trust that the boat and each other, trust the boat and each other, that when the wind fills the sails, that we can actually enjoy the ride. And courage is needed to do this. And experience helps. But others also coming alongside with encouragement and guidance, Lance in this case, not so much John, they can help us love what's going on. And I'm sort of just telling that long intro just to sort of connect the ideas with what we're talking about today. Because as we continue to look at different characters in Jesus' whakapapa, we see God's Spirit at work. God's Spirit is often described as the ruach, the breath or the wind of God. And we see the Spirit blowing, the Spirit at work in the life of Jesus' mother, Mary. And the challenge Mary faced is to let the sail out a little, to catch the wind and to go with it, to not be held back by fear, but to face fear with courage in order to love. Mary's story reminds us that love sometimes calls us to act in unexpected ways. And often courageous love reaches out across barriers to help others. So let's recall our Bible reading where Mary is visited by an angel. How would you feel if you were suddenly being talked to by an angel? How would you feel? The common response to angels in the Bible is fear. Fear, yeah. In life, sometimes we do hard things because of fear, like doing swimming lessons out of fear of drowning, or creating excuses for not making coffee out of fear of receiving coffee snobbery judgment. I don't know where that example came from. Mary's angel does say something pretty scary, though. That she's going to have a baby and that it's going to be God's own son, the long-awaited Messiah, the rescuer of her people, of her nation. And Mary doesn't run away, as if she's been asked to do the dishes. She doesn't ignore it, like we might to an unwelcome request from a boss. Rather, she says these simple words, "Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word. These three simple and stunning statements show a courage born out of love. So firstly, Mary's love for self. The first part of Mary's response says something about her love for herself. In a good way. It's a positive thing. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's one of the greatest commands, given by Mary's son, Jesus. Some translations say, "Here I stand," instead of "Here I am." Here I stand. And it takes courage to love oneself enough to stand in times of fear, doesn't it? But Mary is standing. It's like she's saying, "I have autonomy. I have agency and responsibility. I can respond and I will respond from my own context and with all that I am." Mary recognizes that she is responsible for her response and she's choosing to own that with strength and courage. Maybe Mary didn't know all that this would involve. Who could? But it's interesting to ponder what it must have been like for a Bible character, isn't it? You know, would they have known? Thinking of our song earlier. With our benefit of hindsight, it's a bit easier, isn't it? And there would have been many things that Mary did know. Perhaps the songwriter could have read the scriptures. She was told by the angel that her son would save people and that he would one day rule the nations. She knew this. Funny how we don't sing, "Abraham, did you know that you would father a nation?" and repeat it 20 times. Mary chose to be courageous because of love. Love for self, but also, secondly, Mary's love for God. Mary describes herself as a servant of the Lord. A servant of the Lord. Here I stand, the servant of the Lord. Mary's declaring her love and desire and decision to follow God, to serve God. Mary's choosing in response to the angel to offer what she has. And what Mary has is her very self. I guess it connects a little bit with that greatest commandment given by Jesus. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. What are we seeking as we reflect on 2024? Or in our dreaming and planning for 2025? Are we wanting to be more spectacular? Or be thought of better by others? Or to be popular at a new school or workplace? Or to achieve, to gain respect? To have more influence and power? Mary's heart seems given to God. To love God and to trust that she's loved. For the central marker of who she is loved. And when we have this grounding of knowing we are loved, we are much more able to live love out, even when we're under pressure or in conflict situations. So the third part of Mary's response to the angel's news says something about her love for God's ways. She says, "Here I stand. Here I stand, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." Mary clearly doesn't know how she will become pregnant, and she must have been so confused by much of the angel's announcement. But she trusts the ways of God, indicated by what's been said by God. She wants her life to be aligned with God's ways. She's already a disciple, a learner and follower of God's ways, and this will morph into being a disciple of the way of Jesus. Just as Jesus went on to say in his last request to his disciples, Matthew chapter 28, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And we see this in Mary's willingness to marry Joseph, and in the facing, and in her facing the shame of being rejected by her family as they gathered in Bethlehem and not looking after her. She's faithful. So one verse, three statements. Mary lived these statements. Her life fulfilled this love of self, God, and God's ways from the first time we meet Mary in the Bible right through to when she stands at the foot of Jesus' cross in compassionate witness to the evil violence being forced on her loved son. She shows us that it takes courage to love. Most of Jesus' closest people weren't even on the cross when he died. They weren't there. The courage to love is hard. It can be easier to ignore, to turn away, to not be with another, supporting them. It takes courage to love. Now, I suspect that just like Mary knew, Elizabeth, she was pretty switched on as well. She recognizes Mary's courage and to love and bursts into blessing. Oh, I should have put this up. And she bursts into blessing when blessing Mary when Mary arrives at her doorstep. It's a prophetic blessing, meaning that there's some blowing of God's Spirit's wind into Elizabeth's words, into her blessing. There's a reimagining, a redemptive work taking place in the sharing of these specific words that Elizabeth has drawn on from the past. Words of blessing that were old and believed to be true are being reinterpreted to be more fully true. And it goes a little like this. Elizabeth says to Mary in Luke chapter 1, "Blessed are you above all women, and your child is blessed." Now these words have been shared by woman and to woman twice in their nation's history that we know of in the Bible. Firstly, after their people escaped slavery and settled down to live, they were hounded by an enemy war general called Sisera, who was the nation's who the nation's army and especially were terrorized by. More Games of Thrones scenes if you want to read about it in the book of Judges, chapter 5. But one of Sisera's likely victims is called Jael, and she becomes not only a survivor but a heroine. Heroine. When she kills Sisera. The country's leader, Deborah, comes to Jael and blesses her with these words. Most blessed of women be Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, of tent-dwelling woman, most blessed. And then we read on, and the land had peace for 40 years. And then, in one of the non-biblical books written between our Old Testament and New Testament, a similar blessing is given to a character called Judith after she kills another sleazy army general, enemy. Which says, O daughter, you are blessed by the Most High God above all other women on earth. And blessed be the sovereign God who created the heavens and the earth, who has guided you to cut off the head of the leader of our enemies. So, there's something about these words of blessing that is connected to violence. And yet we see in Mary the very opposite. Despite the threat of violence and the power to be violent, the courageous way of love is chosen. Mary has the courage to love, and her son Jesus has the courage to love. They both show God's heart and plan and ways that love wins. That love for enemies is the way, that God's love is willing to give up life so that others may live. That loving is the courageous way God wants the world to be. Ironically, it's a similar violence that ends up killing Jesus. Yet Jesus' power of love is stronger, rising from the dead, defeating death, showing a better way, bringing hope for the future, bringing his peace-filled kingdom now and in fullness to come, bringing joy that comes from gratitude, bringing love that conquers fear and violence. Jesus' power of love is stronger. So in conclusion, let's be courageous skippers of our lifeboats, so to speak. Courageous skippers in our lives that embrace the wind of God's Spirit. As we feel fear, let's choose love. May we choose love and let this guide our responses. And may we, like Mary, have the courage to love ourselves, standing with strength and purpose and dignity. And may we, like Mary, continue to grow our love for God, to serve in the knowledge that who we are is grounded in the firmest of foundations, the love of God. And may we, like Mary, learn and embrace God's loving ways. That can take real courage, right? Embracing those loving ways. Amen.